Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Now, I am not going to admit that I'm shallow and sometimes like really shiny things, but I am a little bit shallow. And when I saw the names that just raved about Inna's book, The Secret Language of Your Body, I just thought, oh my goodness, I have to have this person on the podcast. Everyone from Bernie Siegel, MD, to Christiane Northrup, MD, just have nothing but incredible things to say about Inna Siegel's book. So Inna is a pioneer in the field of energy medicine and human consciousness. And did I mention that she's also the best-selling author of The Secret Language of Your Body, which, by the way, has been translated into 26 languages, and it's sold over 1 million copies worldwide. Well, you know, sometimes when you interview people, they are a little guarded. They're very protective, as they should be. But honestly, this conversation with Inna, she was so vulnerable and just what she shared so powerful that at one point, and I do talk about this, I say this, I wanted to start weeping. I just sat back and couldn't believe the stories that she was telling me. You know, sometimes I have a guest on and the entire interview is sprinkled with miracles, and that is this episode. I mean, her journey really does begin as a young immigrant from Belarus, and she arrives in Australia at age 9 and did not know how to speak any English. And you know, the cultural dislocation, the bullying, and the emotional isolation she went through soon manifested physically. And while this interview is about a lot of stuff, it's also about her healing journey and how she discovered for herself how she could make lifelong illnesses heal themselves just by paying attention to the story her body was telling her. So now I'm going to get out of the way and let you hear her glorious voice. And so without further ado, here's my conversation with Inna Siegel.
My grandparents had gone through absolute horror in their lives. My grandmother was one of 8 children, and her mother actually was a clairvoyant. And her mother said to her, "Look, during the war, none of us except you will survive, you and your father." And you know, and she prepared her from the age of 12, I think.
Who are you? What do you do? Who are you as a human being? How would you introduce yourself?
Great question. I think for me, I would say that I, in terms of what I do, because it's two different things, obviously, who am I and what I do. So I think in terms of what I do, I feel that I help people to understand that they have an inherent capacity to heal themselves, but even more than that, to transform their lives, to see life in a completely different way, to mainstream way of just like survival and just living your life to pay the bills, to run around and do things, that there's so, so, so much more to us. And for me, I feel like I am an intuitive person who really deeply listens to my inner wisdom, to my heart, and follows it irrelevant if it's easy or not. So I am not that person that will only go that I'll only follow the path that is easy. In fact, I think I am the person that will go, I'll follow the path that is challenging.
I love that. I love that. I mean, okay, so I know a little bit about you and the work that you do. And you're the best-selling author of The Secret Language of Your Body, which I think is fabulous. And you're an intuitive healer. And I love asking this question sometimes because I think it's so interesting. When you were a kid, did you have any idea you were going to be doing this kind of work? And most importantly, what did you want to be when you grew up?
No, I had no idea. I didn't even know that existed, to be honest. So I wanted to do acting and I wanted to do, I wanted to write. I knew that I had abilities in terms of writing, or so I thought anyway. I guess that was the feedback from, you know, from going to school, that I was very good at writing. And I felt like acting was something that just brought out this passion in me. It when I was younger, it gave me the possibility to experience, I would say, empathy, to experience different perspectives, different points of view of what people felt based on, you know, the character that I might have been exploring, even if it was just in an acting class, which I did a lot of those. And it gave me, I guess, this sense of expansion and that life was bigger than what I was otherwise experiencing. So it kind of felt to me like, I remember deciding to go to my first acting class outside of school. And I've never actually really shared this publicly, but I had this experience when I was about 15 where I just felt like a zombie for a while because everybody was saying to me that, you know, you're never going to make any money, especially in Australia, being an actor, and it's just so hard, so, so hard. And so I just pushed it aside because I wanted to do that since I was 5. And then I just felt like a zombie, like I just wasn't really operating in my life in a way that was effective, I felt. So I decided to dance instead. One day I was doing this dance class and this woman gave me a book, and it was, she was 10 years older than me, I remember, and she was studying to be a doctor actually. And she gave me this book and it was called Born to Succeed. And one day I came home from school and I just thought, you know what? I need a message. Like I actually, like if there is God, I want a message. And I opened the book and I closed my eyes and I just went, whatever, wherever my finger kind of stops, I'm going to read that and that's going to be my message. And when I read it, it said, God wants you to do what you want to do. It was, that was the line. And I thought to myself, I want to do acting. None of, like most of my friends don't, only one other friend did. Why am I stopping myself? How do I know that that's not the path for me? And so I ended up doing my own research and I just came to my mom and I said, look, I have to do it. I actually have to do it. And I don't care. I'll get there myself. You know, I just need you to pay for it. And she agreed. And so the first class I went to, I literally got there 3 hours early. That's how excited I was. And I had my little journal and I was writing poetry because I just felt like poetry was coming out of me because I was so excited about it. And it was definitely, I really feel I wouldn't be here if I hadn't gone to the classes that I did.
You don't sound like you would be afraid being up in front of a ton of people on stage. You don't have that fear?
Well, no, I'm not afraid. I'm excited about it. I think also when I was 21, I think I ended up meeting this teacher who was teaching public speaking with humor at the time. And He was a very successful public speaker, and he was teaching people who were kind of speaking to businesses a lot. And everybody was, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s. He was at his classes, and I was 21. I was the youngest person there. And I remember him saying, look, if you can just embrace this and embrace being around these older people and embrace what I'm teaching you, you'll be amazing. And he's like, you don't have to rush because you're so young. And so, you know, I think that gave me a lot of confidence, just having, you know, that support as well. Even though I had already done a lot of acting classes, and I'd done theater performances, and I'd done, you know, being in little TV shows or movies or whatever I was doing at the time, you know, on a small scale, but still, I felt like that support and just understanding and the structure. And I think that confidence comes through structure and understanding and knowing what you're doing, you know, knowing what to do. And I think that I remember my very first time I did public speaking, I was saying to him, I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I'm ready. And he was like, just get up and just start speaking, you know, and I did, you know, and it was so funny because prior to that, because I was so young and I was 21, I think I was already starting to teach, to talk about healing work with people. And so it was kind of my very first time of sharing with people, you know, that this is what I do. And this man came up to me, and I was definitely very different looking to everybody else at this event because I was just super young and dressed in a more younger way than the rest of the people. And this man came up to me and he said, I think you're too young to be doing this. I just think that you need more time. It felt a little bit like a shutdown, but I sat with it, and I just, you know, I came up to him a bit later in the day and I said, look, you know, I know you're a lot older, you're in your 50s, and, you know, to you, because he said to me, people will start listening to you when you have gray hair. That was his message to me at the time. And he's like, look around. And I said to him, I just wonder who hurt you so much when you were younger, when you were a child, and shut you down that you feel you have to do it to others. And he was just like, oh my God. And then he actually said to me, I'm so impressed that you had the courage to come to me and say this. He said, I want to help you. I'm going to tell me when your next event is, and I will send people to you. And so that was, and I had a lot of those because I was so young when I started. I had a lot of those types of experiences because I really did have to kind of, I guess, show people that I wasn't just somebody who, you know, who was kind of willy-nilly about things, that I did take what I was doing very seriously. And, you know, and that I've always been this person who studied a lot. Okay. I studied from when I was very young. I was self-motivated. So I was surrounded by people who were not self-motivated. But for me, I think because I wasn't born in Australia, I was born in Belarus. And then my parents and I lived in Italy for about 10 months before coming to Australia. For me, it was that sense of, you know, that I had been given a different opportunity than other people, and my parents had really struggled and suffered through the journey. And so I really felt that I needed to not so much prove myself in that sense of, like, you know, that you don't feel good enough and you're proving yourself, but more to myself that I, you know, that I could take the opportunity that they've given me and that I could really do something special. I could do something extraordinary. And so I always felt that when I put effort into something, it was all of everything that I had.
Wow. 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 I just have to say, I can't even imagine. I'm so impressed with you and your standing up to that man, because frankly, even at the age that I am now, I don't know if I can do that. And I'm just so impressed by you just having this really confident presence when you were so young. I'm curious, when did you discover, or how did you discover that you could do this intuitive work? How did that happen?
There were different signs during when I was growing up that I didn't really take into consideration, but later on I can see it. So I had knowings from a very early age of things that would potentially happen, but it felt very, it didn't feel strange. It felt natural. They weren't necessarily big things. They were just small things. Like I remember my mom was trying to figure out if my grandparents would be accepted to come to Australia. And I would say to her, I know they will. I can feel it. And I would lie there at times and I would have, it was more like just little symbolic images that would show up for me to give me a sense of, I guess, moving forward. But it wasn't anything big. And I also grew up, you know, in Belarus, and I was born in Minsk, where at the time where I was very little, and when I went to school, it was very kind of, it was an atheist country. So there was, you couldn't really talk openly about any spiritual beliefs. And I was, again, I was pretty young, but when I would go to school, we would essentially have to do experiments to prove that God didn't exist. So for me, it was very kind of conflictual, I should say, when I was growing up, because, and I came to Australia because I didn't know what I believed. I didn't really know exactly where I stood with anything spiritual, to be honest. And then I ended up having a lot of health issues, partly, I think, because there was a Chernobyl accident and there was so much radiation. Partly, I think, my grandparents had gone through absolute horror in their lives. My grandmother was one of 8 children, and her mother actually was a clairvoyant. And her mother said to her, look, during the war, none of us except you will survive, you and your father. And, you know, and she prepared her from the age of 12, I think she told her, which, you know, is so hard to comprehend. And in the end, it was quite an extraordinary experience where the German soldiers came and they had put everybody onto this truck to basically kill them. And her mother knew that. And my grandmother came out. She was hidden, but she came out and her mother went, what the hell are you doing? I've tried to hide you the whole time. And now you're coming here to get on this truck. Are you, you know, they're going to kill us. And so I don't know how my grandmother did it, but great grandmother figured out a way to be, I think she must have been elbowing or pushing some German soldier, and they said, oh, there's too many people, get off, and told my great grandmother and her family to get off, you'll get on the next one. And my great grandmother said to my grandmother, she said, she had a 3-month-old baby. She said, I'm going to give the baby to this lady over there. I'm going to tell you to run, and you have to run and not look back. They're going to shoot. Even if they shoot me, you have to run and get over this fence. And, you know, my grandmother said to her, who are you leaving me on? And her mother said, God and good people. So I had kind of had that story. But I also just, like, my grandmother, and I don't even know how you process the fact that everybody in your family was killed, including your mother too. I mean, she would have been killed anyway, but she did save my grandmother's life. And my grandmother was 13 at the time. So, and she survived on her own for 4 years through, I feel, her intuition and her mother's guidance. So I feel like for me, there was a lot of unprocessed, I guess, energy that my family hadn't processed that became digestive issues for me. And then when I came to Australia, so when I was in Italy, it was kind of like the best time for me. I felt so comfortable in that country, so accepted. I learned the language within the time that we were there, and I just felt loved. And then when I came to Australia, in my young mind, I thought that Australia was going to be like Italy, but better. And it was not. And so the culturally, Australia was completely different to what I was used to in Europe. And I found it very difficult. I didn't speak the language. I found that whilst when I was in Italy and in the European kind of countries, I was very, loved and accepted. Whereas in Australia, I felt that was different. I was rejected. I didn't speak the language. I didn't come from this culture. And I was bullied for not being able to speak English properly. And so within a short period of time, I started getting psoriasis all over my skin and my elbows, and like my whole kind of elbow was covered. And this also came from the family. My dad had it, my grandfather had it, his sister had it pretty badly. And, this was quite uncomfortable as an experience. And then when I went to high school, so I really struggled in primary school. When I went to high school, I felt like I ended up going to a very kind of, let's call it a posh school, in a sense where they gave, it was known as a good school, and they gave my parents and people who were from other countries a huge discount to go to this school. And the issue was this, that you were mixing people who had grown up in like with millions and millions of dollars with people who've grown up like me with literally nothing. And they, you know, so then I really felt like a completely different experience of being in an environment which I couldn't fully explain to my parents, where these people looked down on me and my friends, because obviously I could only be friends with those people who came from a similar background to me. And we felt like we were, you know, slaves or something. You know, that's how they treated us. They treated us like we were, you know, there to pick up after them, or to, you know, like it wasn't a treatment of like being human in a sense, because they were from these powerful families. And at that time, I just felt like a very different level, I think, of rejection than I felt from not being able to speak the language. It was like who I was wasn't worthy as a person at the time to be around these people. And this is when I started to develop back pain, which I didn't know how to essentially deal with. And so my mom took me everywhere, but I just wouldn't go. And I think by the time I was 18, I ended up meeting my first husband, and he was very, very kind of open to alternative healing and spirituality. And he tried to do research and take me to different people. And so I would get better, but I would get worse. I'd get better and I'd get worse. And then I ended up getting pregnant, which made it a lot worse. And I just did not think I was ready, to be honest, at 19 for a child. And I really, really worked hard towards accepting this scenario. But by the time I was 8.5 months pregnant, I was feeling something was off. And essentially the child died. And that was pretty horrendous as an experience. So my whole body started breaking down even more. And I was just completely stuck. And I was seeing people every day, 5 days a week. But I got to a place where I couldn't move. I went to see this chiropractor, and I'd been seeing him 3 times a week for about a year. And he just said, look, I really don't know what to do for you because your body's stuck. You know, like, I can't do anything for you. Go home. And on the way home, I think this was the first time where from everything that happened, I was depressed. I was anxious. My skin was breaking out even more. I had anxiety to the roof and back. I couldn't eat food properly. My whole spine was just like fully just inflamed. And on the way home, I just decided that it's time to stop being a victim, and that I needed to connect to my body. I needed to learn this language. I needed to heal myself. And so when I got home, I just started breathing with the pain instead of resisting the pain. And it occurred to me at the time that I didn't really need divine help for this, that I was just out of my depth. And so I did. I asked, you know, if there is something really, truly divine out there, help me now. And I just felt this warmth and this golden light enter me. And I thought, okay, as skeptical as I am at this point, because I've been to all the spiritual people and they haven't helped me, as skeptical as I am, okay, something's happening. And then this thought came to me, Hurston, and it was this thought of, I wonder if I could see my back. I wonder what it looks like. And at that point, it was just like this light switch went on. I don't even know where from the thought occurred, you know, and essentially I could see my back. I could see my spine and all the inflammation and everything that I've just shared with you about, you know, because I asked why. You know, show me why, about where did this come from? Everything from my grandparents to my to struggling at school, to just my parents not really knowing how to support me in the best way through what was going on because they were struggling themselves. All of that showed up. And I saw that as images, one after kind of like, I would see one, you know, and feel through it and allow myself to cry, or I would recognize, right, this is what happened, and acknowledge it, because so much about healing is acknowledgement. And as I was doing that, I could feel this letting go. I could feel my body letting go, like this whole spine that I had, you know, everything was so heavy and stressed. And so as I let go and I fell asleep, the next morning it was like 70% of the pain was gone, and I was just this different person, in a sense of I wasn't as tightly wound. And I decided to keep exploring. And so I kept exploring for the next few weeks, and by the end of the 3 weeks, or it could have been two, three, whatever it was, I had no more psoriasis, and it's never come back. And I had it everywhere. I had it on my knees. I had it all over here, everywhere, all over my elbows, my back. Just like it was like I'd never had back pain, and I've never had it since. I, you know, my digestive system improved, but it's kind of like it's still very much a part of me that shows me where I'm at, because my whole family holds stress there. You know, it is it's an ancestral issue of stress, like holding anxiety and fear, and just imagining, I can't even imagine the fear that my grandmother lived through. My grandfather also spent 10 years in a camp, you know, in a work camp in Siberia from 14 to 24. Everybody in the family does have digestive issues, because this is an area of assimilation. It's an area to, you know, of assimilating experiences, and it's a tough one. So it's something I've got to be aware of. I can eat anything, which has been a journey. I am very cautious of, in terms of, not cautious in a sense, but I'm very aware of what I put into my mouth. You know, I try to make it as healthy and clean as I can.
Totally. Yeah, I'm actually just sitting here, in awe and in gratitude at the strength and the fortitude of your great-grandmother, and that she was clairvoyant, and that she saw what was going to happen. And what a huge gift. But what a terrible gift to give your grandmother, to tell her, look, this is going to happen, and you are going to be the one who survives. I can't even imagine the amount of strength. Your great-grandmother sounds like someone who was just larger than life, and I don't know. I'm just still trying to understand what you're telling me, because it's just utterly shocking. And then the strength and fortitude of your own grandmother, you know, being that young and then being left on her own for that long and having to go in the world with the loss of her family and make her own way, the one who survived, you know. But it's very clear to me, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, but I suspect you will, that this talent or this skill runs in your family. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's definitely been there from both my grandmother's side and her and my grandfather's, more stronger from my grandmother's. I think you're making me reflect on, there was a profound, profound experience that my grandmother told me about that she had, which was after about 4 years of being in the forest on her own with no proper clothes as well, from, you know, it gets to minus 30 there, Celsius. So she said that she was walking in the snow, and it was kind of like up to her waist, because she was also not a very tall woman. And she said that she was pretty much frozen. Her legs were frozen. And she said she got to a point, like, she hadn't eaten for God knows how long. She was eating ice, like snow. And she just lay on the snow, and she just thought, this is it. I'm like, I can't keep going. I'm done. And she said at that moment, her mother appeared to her, like, very clearly, and she said she had all the children, because my grandmother didn't actually know 100% that every child, because she had a brother who was 10, and he'd gone to make, I don't know, artillery or something, and she didn't know if he had died or if he was still alive. And she said she saw all the children. and she saw her brother. He was their last. And she said to her mom, I can't do it anymore. You have to take me. And her mother looked at her and she said, and my grandmother's name was Emma. She said to her, Emma, you do not have the same destiny as us. And your father is still coming back and he needs you. And she said to her, you have to survive. And she said to her, what you're going to do is this. There is a little village not very far from here. She said, you're going to go to the village and you're going to find this little house. It's going to look like it's falling apart. And she said, you'll know in your gut feeling which house it is. You're going to walk in there. And these people are going to help you with your legs because her legs were frozen. You know, she said she had to almost crawl there. Like it was, and that's what my grandmother did. She went, she found strength to go to this village. There was this house that was falling apart. She went in there. There was this lady and she went, oh my God. And she just helped my grandmother save her legs. So that she, I think she's, my grandmother said she stayed there a few weeks to, you know, to recover. And I don't know how, Kirsten, but she told me so many stories towards the end of her life that of how she survived, of how she would go and find, she was in the partisans, so how she would find these people and then it could be midnight, they were in the forest. I mean, anybody would be scared. And she would go, are you staying? Are you moving forward? And they would say, no, we're staying the night. And she would go, no, I'm going. And she would have been 15, maybe 16 at the time. And they would, you know, they would go, are you crazy? 12 o'clock at night, you know, it's pitch black. And she would go, I just, in my gut, I know if you stay, you're going to be killed. And she said that she would later learn that almost every time, like there'd be someone who survived and somehow she met them again because they went to get water, or they went to get food and then they'd come back and everybody was killed in that camp. And she just knew, and she said she would just run and they would be like, you know, Germans at the time, like that was, you know, the fight, they would be shooting. And somebody else would fall, but not her. And she'd just keep running. I don't, you know, I was like, I have gained so much courage from both of my grandparents in my life. But that, you know, that level of, you know, courage and survival, I don't know. I don't even, you know, I think that's extraordinary.
I started tearing up when you were telling me the story about her family showing up. And I mean, her mother and her siblings. I just thought, okay, I can't start crying. This is so powerful and it's so beautiful. And it's astonishing and horrible what human beings do to each other. But I think it's also helpful to understand that there are things happening beyond this reality in other places and spaces that we might not have discovered yet that are here for us, that want us to succeed, that want us to bring beauty into the world, to help other people, to create things that will help people. Thank you so much. Your grandmother just sounds astonishing. And you are astonishing. And I guess, you know, I would love to know, what kind of work do you do for people? Do you help them? Do you meet with them online? Do you meet with them in person? Do you lay your hands on them? Is it more of a, you know, an intuitive hit? How do you work? I'd love to hear about it.
Well, at this point, it's for many, many years, I did a lot of one-on-one healing sessions. some of them were in person, some of them would be on the phone. When I started, there was no Zoom, no Skype, no nothing. So it'd be just phone. To be honest, I've always wanted to empower people rather than doing it for them. So I created this kind of system called Awaken the Healer Within, because I actually want people to awaken the healer within themselves. And it's funny because one of my students, she said, you know, when I heard you say, you know, that that's what you teach, I thought to myself, what a great gimmick. Like, I'm sure she teaches stuff, but not that. And she's like, no, you do teach that. So for me, it is teaching people, this is what I do the most now, rather than, I don't really do many one-on-one sessions, even though it is something that I occasionally do for people who are really struggling. But to give you an idea of what I do is probably an easiest way to do it as if I was doing a session on somebody. And what I teach them, what I teach people, where I teach them to get to. So essentially what I'm really teaching people is to awaken their capacity to sensitize themselves, to know that we can connect and sense things from each other, and that there is this symbolic language. There's a language of the soul. And when this is what I learned, this is how I healed myself, this is how I've helped thousands and thousands and thousands of people. So when I describe myself, this is what I also teach people. So I would tune into somebody in a sense of getting an awareness of what is going on in their whole inner being. So what has, let's say they do have an ailment like I did. Let's say they have digestive issues. And what I will do is connect to this kind of, to their inner self, to their soul, let's say it. And I will ask, show me where to start. Show me where do I start. I will be guided to, let's say, the throat area, not necessarily the digestive system, even though the issue is the digestive system. So I might be guided to the throat. And I'll start getting a sense of firstly, what is the throat about? The throat is about communication. It's about sharing and speaking. So there's something about this person that there's an issue around communication. But I'm also really aware of kind of energy centers, let's call them chakras, that and how they relate to timelines, because I've really, really studied this. So how they relate to developmental stages within us and timelines. So if somebody has an issue in the throat, it already gives me an awareness that there's a potential that something happened in the timeline of around potentially 28 years old and in that 7-year period. But if there's a big issue here, but it's also potentially connected to another part of the body, that, you know, when we have pain, we often focus our attention just on the pain, on the area of pain. We don't actually focus on the area, on everything else and what caused it. And this is why I say to people, I don't believe in a root cause of anything. I believe in foundational causes that are layered. There's not one root cause. And so what I'm trying to do is create a map. So from here, from the throat, I'm trying to go, okay, so this communication, and it's potentially around this time period, but I've also over the years sensitized myself so much that in my hands, I believe that we have a chakra in the hands, and I believe it because I use it and I've seen it. And I also believe that we have subtle bodies and that we have something called the etheric body. And this etheric body is the copy of the physical, but it also connects you, holds your ancestry in it. It holds your vitality in it, and it holds memory. And so for me, what I've worked with and learned how to do, so awaken my etheric hands so that they can guide me towards the memory body, to what is in the etheric body, to what's actually going on there, where are things stored? Because a lot of people talk about unconscious and subconscious, but I'm this person who goes, where is it? Show me. How do I get there? I need to understand that, rather than I hate generalizations. It's my pet hate. So anything that's generalized, I'm like, well, okay, that's nice. But give me the science of it. Give me the detail. How do I get there? And so with years and years and years of study and tuning into people and understanding things, I went, oh, okay, this is the way to go to see where things are really actually stored. This is the actual subconscious. This is the actual memory. Because when I teach people this, they often go, I didn't remember this consciously, because we can't. You know, if it's traumatic, you don't remember things consciously. But what I also discovered is that we have archetypes. So let's say every experience you have. So today, who you are today is not who you are tomorrow, which means that who you were yesterday has become an archetypal part of you that has perspectives, that has thoughts, that has feelings, that has understandings. And what I realized over the years is that, yes, we can begin our work by looking at emotions and, you know, breathing through them and working with them. But where does an emotion start and end? We actually need structure to know whether we're getting better. And most people and most ways of working with emotions does not have a structure. So people just go, oh, I've had a release, but why am I angry again? Or they go, I feel I have anger. And what I say to people is, anger in the throat and anger in your stomach is not the same anger. It's not the same thing. Here, it's about my frustration that I can't speak or somebody's not listening to me or hearing me. But in the stomach, it is about digesting the experience and boundaries, and that your boundaries have actually been crossed. So they're not the same things. And people love generalizing because it's easier, and it's what I don't like. So I like detail because I feel like healing happens in the detail. And so what I learned, Kirsten, is to work with archetypes in conjunction with timelines, in conjunction with processes that help you to release. And sometimes it's emotional, sometimes it's energetic, sometimes it's a perspective shift, sometimes it's all of it. Most of the time it's all of it. You know, I help people to do it through music, through voice, through movement, through touch, you know, through teaching them about certain pressure points, through connecting processes where we might go, we're going to work more with the thinking part of us. So we're going to look at what we need to release or let go from our mind. And now we're going to work with the archetypes by understanding that when we go back to a time period, that part of you either grew or it got stunted and stuck. If it got stuck, this is where a lot of diseases eventually come from, because you got stuck in a perspective. You got stuck in something that was hurtful. And so this is where we'd start to work on that perspective, right? And how do we transform it? And what I say to people is, whether it fully changes your physical body or not, healing happens on levels that, like, you know, as I'm sharing with you about my grandparents, especially my grandmother, that we don't fully understand. So, for instance, my grandmother ended up with leukemia, which I knew 100% she was going to get, 100%, because you cannot go through that trauma and not process it and I don't even know if you can fully process something like that and not have a blood disease, because you lost people that were your blood, you know. And what I said to my grandmother at the end of her life was that, and I was still very young, you know, at the time she died. So in my healing journey, I should say. So I said to her, you know, what I really ask for you is, firstly, do you feel loved? Do you feel like your life's been worth it? And she said, absolutely. And I said, because I really love you. I want you to really feel love. And it was actually extraordinary watching her die. I mean, I've watched different people die, you know. She was the most graceful person. She was so graceful. Like, she did not make anybody else suffer. She didn't put people through hell like I've seen, because she was dying. She held it. She really, really held it. And it's just, you know, at one point she couldn't have a shower because she just could not step into the shower. Her legs were very painful. And I said to her, how do you feel? Like, I know that it's such a struggle for you, and it's, I know you're in pain, and I could really help her with releasing the pain, but how do you feel? And she's like, oh my God, you know, every day doesn't matter. Like, every day of me being here and breathing and connecting to you and others is worth it. It's worth anything. It's just like, I learned so much wisdom from this woman, and just how she didn't allow anyone else to really, like, I knew about her pain because I was helping her with pain, but no one else really did. She didn't talk about it. She didn't show it. It was incredible. Just the strength inside of her. And I said to her, like, I do need you to feel the feelings, you know, like, you do need to cry. You need to get it out. And she, I didn't even know this because my aunt told me that literally 2 days before she died, my aunt was there and she was crying. She started crying and she said, my aunt said, why are you crying? She said, I don't think I've got long left. And Ina told me it's something I have to do. So she didn't even know why exactly. She just went, she's asked me to do it. I have faith that I'm going to do it. I'm going to let it go, because Ina told me it was healing. And so it was just absolutely extraordinary. And so what I say to people, again, just giving that in as an example, is that healing happens on so, so many different levels. You know, it happens on the spiritual level, on mental, physical, emotional levels. That is where I guide people. And it's very hard to share it in a few minutes, of the levels and the depth that I've studied. You know, I've studied the spiritual realm. I've studied what happens when people pass over because of my own history. I've studied in depth and what is the best way to transform my feelings, which is the archetypal work that I teach people, that by seeing that part of you that got stuck and stunted, we can make it grow again. And by growing, you heal on not just physically, but on all levels, you know. And then I teach people about the etheric body, which is the copy of the physical, and how we can work with it with our hands and with our etheric hands and with the energy that we have in our chakras to rebuild the organs etherically, and then to transform that into that eventually becomes physical. So there's so much, so much.
Well, I was going to ask you, I mean, I'm just listening to you and I'm thinking, do you ever think that your grandmother lived so that the world, so that we could have you, so that you could transmit this information and this knowledge to all of us? Because frankly, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, I mean, I wish I could travel back in time to buy your book because I need it desperately. But do you ever think that?
I had this experience when I was 22 and I was walking. It was my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary. And I was walking up the stairs, and it was the first time in my life where I could only see people's souls. I could not actually see them physically. And when I got upstairs to this restaurant, to the restaurant, up until then, I had asked this question of why did my grandparents, both of them, have to go through the hell and the horror that they've gone through? Like, I just don't understand it. And I used to see them from the place of the victim, like that they were the victims of this life and how they lived. I mean, you know, they didn't have toilets, they didn't have shower, they didn't have like a bathroom. They had to go outside and, you know, like, and kind of go to the toilet in a hole. Like I lived there too with them in that house. But you know, I was only young. So to me, it was like, I don't understand. And in that particular day when I was there, I remember seeing my grandparents, and it was like I could see their souls as being these incredibly beautiful, strong, shiny, expanded light. And I was given this message that these people were not victims at all. They were some of the most courageous souls to go through and survive that, and that I was to use that courage. So rather than using the victimhood, which is what I had been doing, I was to take what they've gone through and use it as courage, and really use that experience of that suffering that they've gone through to help others, you know, in ways that, you know, allowed others to go, hey, you know, I come from a family, I understand what suffering is, I understand what struggle is, you know, I understand what trauma is, you know, what that looks like. And so I definitely feel like, you know, the survival of my grandmother, of my grandfather, was extraordinary to help me, hopefully to help my daughter in the future and my son, you know, to do amazing work and their children. But to bring something from my perspective, something extraordinary without fear, or even if fear comes up, to just, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway, so to speak.
Conversation with Inna just really reminded me of my earlier podcast interview with Douglas Soy, and how he says there's no other choice but to just step off the cliff, live a brave life, walk towards fear. And this ending that Inna provided just absolutely, I thought, yes, we all need to hear this. I just wanted to say thank you to her for being so open, so candid, so real about what her family has been through, what they have survived through. And while some of it just reduced me to heartbreak, we need to hear these stories so we understand what humans are capable of, not only great tragedy, but also incredible strength and resilience. And because of the strength and resilience of her ancestors, we have Inna, who is bringing to us a message of hope, of healing, of magic, and even you creating your own miracles with regards to the healing of your body. So I want to thank Inna for sharing her story and for being so open and incredible. There will be a link to Inna's website and her book so you can check all of it out and see just a little bit more about this incredible, incredible human and what she's doing in the world. I want to thank all of you for listening. And if you like what you hear, please do consider leaving a rating or a review. Those ratings and reviews help other people find us, and they warm the little cockles of my heart. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Inna. survive and thrive. I mean, I think challenges that arise in our lives, things that come up and press up against us that are difficult, that seem almost insurmountable, to where you think, I am never going to be able to get through this. If you push on through, and if you open yourself to the learning that they are trying to transmit to you, well, then you might have learning that you can give to other people. I mean, I do resist the idea that every trial, every tribulation provides us with learning. But in my case, in my life, that has proven to be the case. If only the fact that I should never, ever give up, and I can always survive what is thrown my direction. So be like Inna and understand your own capacity for getting through things that seem almost impossible. And, you know, after you survive those things, then go tell other people, because your message and your experience is going to be invaluable for them. They need to see people who have gone through things that are unimaginable, so then they can have the bravery, they can have the strength to make it through. And you know, if everybody did this, if everybody formed community and collaboration around surviving and thriving, and then communicating what that looks like, I mean, pretty soon, I suspect, we are going to have a whole village, a whole army, a whole mess of people who are just going to be unstoppable, and they're not going to take no for an answer, and they're going to make this world and everyone else in it more beautiful, stronger, and able to survive pretty much anything.